All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm giving you my rapid reaction not only to the Falcons' 23-16 loss to the Carolina Panthers in Week 5, but also talking about the imminent dismissal of Falcons head coach Dan Quinn.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, currently on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, hosting this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. In today's episode, we will be talking about the Falcons' 23-16 loss to the Carolina Panthers, some of my big takeaways from that game, looking at the offense, looking at defense, talking about Matt Ryan, questions about the leadership, Todd Gurley, others. Factors that played into why the Falcons lost on Sunday. But obviously the big storyline, if you guys did not hear it, Sunday afternoon, shortly after the game, The Athletic's Jeff Schultz reported that the Falcons are finalizing the decision to fire Dan Quinn, which will happen later in the week. And so obviously that is clearly the biggest story right now it going on in Atlanta, and sort of we'll get into why Dan Quinn got fired and sort of the shortcomings, particularly over the last couple of years, that led to his dismissal in the current predicament, and sort of, you know, basically kind of give a eulogy on his career. But sort of let's get into Dan Quinn's firing, as well as some of the elements that played a hand in his firing in this Panthers game, as your Locked On Falcons lead story. The Falcons' record fell to 0-5 for the first time since 1997 after their 23-16 loss to the Carolina Panthers in Week 5. Now that 97 Falcons team under first-year head coach Dan Reeves managed to finish that year 7-9 with a strong 6-2 finish that year after a 1-7 start, and then eventually went on to a Super Bowl appearance with a 14-2 record the following year, 1998. Unfortunately for current Falcons head coach Dan Quinn, he won't have an opportunity to turn those things around, as Jeff Schultz of The Athletic reports that his firing is all but finalized coming off the heels of this Panthers loss. Per Schultz, the official announcement will come later this week. Quinn's tenure as the Falcons head coach comes to a disappointing end after guiding the Falcons to a Super Bowl loss, like Reeves, in his second season back in 2016 and a playoff appearance in 2017. The Falcons have gone 14-23 since, including back-to-back 7-9 seasons in 2018 and 2019 before their 0-5 start this year. Quinn ends his tenure in Atlanta with a winning record, 43-42, and meaning that he's the fourth coach in Falcons' 55-year history to finish with a winning record, and the third one dismissed by current Falcons owner Arthur Blank. Quinn was able to quote-unquote save his job a year ago after a 1-7 start, going 6-2 in the second half, which included some surprising road wins against New Orleans Saints and San Francisco 49ers, two playoff teams last year, with the latter, of course, representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. But the third consecutive slow start for the Falcons in 2020 proved too much after a 1-3 start in 2018, a 1-7 start in 2019, and, of course, the 0-5 start this year. Schultz came on Locked On Falcons earlier this season and indicated that Blank was fully prepared to fire Quinn last year after their bye week, until their surprising win over the Saints in Week 10, a win that Quinn was able to springboard into keeping the job going into 2020. Perhaps a win on Sunday against the Panthers might have meant the same thing for Quinn in order to keep his hopes alive, but proved, of course, not to be the case. As the Falcons' offense and defense continued to stagnate against Carolina, and the inconsistency that has plagued this team over the past few seasons in the Quinn era continued to show itself again. You could argue that the Falcons defense did show some small progress this past week, but it wasn't enough. Panthers quarterback Teddy Bridgewater finished the game with 313 yards passing, including 261 and two touchdowns in the first half. Panthers running back Mike Davis ran roughshod through the Falcons defense that struggled with missed tackles on his way to an 89-yard effort on the ground and 60 yards in the air, including a receiving touchdown. Panthers wide receivers Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel, and DJ Moore combined for 17 catches for 241 yards and a touchdown, and the Falcons corners too often looked overmatched. But making things worse for Quinn was the fact that the Falcons offense, despite having their best rushing day in over 21 games, really struggled to produce. Todd Gurley finished the game with 121 yards rushing, his first 100-yard performance since week 13 of 2018, and the first time a Falcons rusher broke 100 yards since Brian Hill did it against Carolina back in week 16 of 2018. The Falcons passing game, however, was pretty inconsistent as Matt Ryan threw a devastating interception with 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, with the Falcons in a position to tie the game down 20-13 at that point. Ryan made an off-target throw to wide receiver Russell Gage in the end zone, and it was picked off by Panthers defensive back Justin Burris. Despite the poor defensive performance overall, that pick came on the ensuing drive, coming off a critical stop for the Falcons defense, who managed to force their lone three and out of the game on the previous drive to give Ryan and the offense another chance to tie it. Even though the big story rightfully will center on the dismissal of Dan Quinn this week, Sunday's game only further increases questions and scrutiny surrounding Matt Ryan and his future in Atlanta. With the Falcons currently poised to have a very high draft pick, and if Ryan doesn't start to play better, there's going to be a bigger push for the Falcons to use that high draft pick on a quarterback. And that also comes off the heels of reports that emerged on Sunday morning from Fox Sports' Jay Glazer that Gurley was one of the more prominent voices this week advocating for Quinn within the Falcons locker room. Based off of his play versus the Panthers, he clearly put it all on the line for his now former head coach. Ryan didn't quite live up to that standard, and the concerns about the lack of veteran leadership within the Falcons locker room will only further continue to be tested now under a currently unknown interim coach that is poised to take over for Quinn for the remaining 11 games this season. So there's your Locked On Falcons lead story, guys. We're going to continue today's podcast by getting further into the sort of takeaways from this Panthers game as we sort of continue our conversation later in the episode, getting into sort of the three big reasons why Dan Quinn lost his job. But before we get there, I do want to let you guys know that you should check out and subscribe to the Locked On NFL podcast. Check out Peter Bukowski of Locked On Panthers, who hosts on Monday, to get his takeaways from all of Sunday's action on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Visa knows that local businesses are the heartbeat of our communities. Whether they're our corner stores, our coffee spots, or our favorite shops, local businesses have always been there for us. They remember our orders. They call us by name, always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile to support us and our community. And right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So now it's time for us to return the favor. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. So I do want to get further into the Dan Quinn stuff on today's Locked On Falcons podcast, but I do have some takeaways from this Panthers game. Defensively, the Falcons simply got out physicaled. They missed a lot of tackles, they blew coverages and the like. Those issues have plagued the team throughout the Dan Quinn era, and especially this year. You know, one of the things that they mentioned coming out of halftime was that Dan Quinn challenged his team's, you know, so-called manhood during halftime after the Panthers dropped 20 points on them in the first half. Now, when you look at the final score and the fact that the Falcons only gave up 3 points on three Panther possessions in the second half, you could argue that they did respond to that challenge. But that response wasn't exactly pretty. You can make the argument that the defense did show improvement this week, especially given what they showed last week against Green Bay, and especially given that they were able to sort of put the clamps on the Panthers in the second half after basically being dead last in the NFL going into this weekend, having given up 82 points across the first four games in the second half alone, allowing only 3 points and getting that three and out, that much needed three and out, is arguably a big step forward for that unit. But they did let Mike Davis run roughshod over them on the subsequent drive after the Ryan interception. it's not really forgivable in the sense of that's not what you want from a good defense. A good defense would have gotten a stop, but we know that the Falcons don't have a good defense. And so they had one good counterpunch in this game, and they gave that on the previous drive with that three and out. And the fact that the Falcons needed to go out there and tie the game, and maybe if they had done so, would have given that defense the energy and the ability it needed to get another stop. But, of course, since Matt Ryan essentially blew it, all the wind kind of went out of their sails. And so switching sides to the offensive side of the ball, obviously, as I mentioned before, the running game was solid. Gurley, for the second week in a row, looked like the best player on the Falcons team. Brian Hill had some nice runs coming off the bench. The passing game wasn't very good. They were able to get Calvin Ridley involved. He finished the game as their top receiver with 8 catches for 136 yards. Not much else from the Falcons receivers, with Julio Jones sitting out this game. 2 catches for Gage, 2 catches for Hayden Hurst, 1 catch for Alameda Zacchaeus on the opening drive. And then, you know, he got maybe like 2 targets the rest of the game. So there were some drops from some of those guys, including Ridley, but there were also some missed throws from Matt Ryan. The missed throws in the second half, I think, stand out. The Falcons, you know, down 20-3 at halftime, had a chance to sort of come out and get back into this game with a touchdown to start the second half. They came out, were able to drive down the field thanks largely to Todd Gurley's legs. They started out that drive with 3 runs for Todd Gurley, combining for 45 yards to basically get them into Panthers territory. Then they ran the ball to Ito Smith. He got 1 yard. And then they had 2 passes by Matt Ryan broken up, and they wound up settling for 3. Then on their next offensive possession, Ryan made his best throw of the game. He made a big boy throw, put on his big boy britches, and made a big-time throw on a 3rd and 16 to Calvin Ridley for 26 yards. That was basically their second completion of 20-plus yards up to that point in the game. They were able to get down in the red zone subsequently after that, had an opportunity on 3rd down. Panthers showed cover 2 on that 3rd down play. Ryan was staring down Ridley on that particular play, looking for him on a corner route. Hayden Hurst did come open on that play over the middle between the 2 split safeties, and Ryan simply didn't see him. So it's similar to last week's game against Green Bay, where the Falcons had an opportunity. Matt Ryan missed Calvin Ridley in the red zone on an early drive in that game. He missed Hayden Hurst in the red zone on this drive in this game. So the red zone issues, again, continue to get compounded with the ensuing series with the interception. With the game on the line, you know, they got man coverage on that particular play. They had Ridley singled up on the outside. But Gage, you know, was the guy that Matt Ryan wanted to go to in that particular situation. I don't know what throw Matt Ryan was making. You know, maybe you could defend Matt Ryan. He was trying to throw back shoulder. I don't know why you would throw back shoulder on that particular route. But that's the only real explanation, because he either was trying to throw back shoulder to Russell Gage, or he severely underthrew that ball and behind Russell Gage, which made it an easy play for Burris to pick off. So, you know, you had the entire game where Matt Ryan had issues staring down Calvin Ridley, and it was kind of to the detriment to the offense at times. And the one time that he would have been rewarded for staring down Calvin Ridley on that, you know, interception play, he seemingly went away from him. Not to, you know, we'll see what the All 22 says and whether Ridley was open, but, you know, one-on-one, your guy who's been productive all game long, seems like you would take full advantage of that opportunity and give Ridley a chance to make a play, and Matt Ryan decided to go in another direction. So that kind of summarizes the Falcons offensive performance. The last point I'll say is we saw the Falcons run cover 0 again. They gave a 57-yard touchdown to DJ Moore this time. They've run that coverage twice this season. They've given up 2 completions on those 2 plays for 85 yards and 2 touchdowns. So you may or may not recall that they ran cover 0 on the final score of the Bears game in week 3 on that Anthony Miller touchdown. They put Bleary Wilson in the mismatch in the slot against Anthony Miller on a post route. And this time it was Isaiah Oliver on an underneath route to DJ Moore with no safety help. You know, DJ Moore basically, once he was able to run away from Isaiah Oliver on like a little whip route, there was nobody else catching him. The last little tidbit I'll say on this game before we move on and talk more about Dan Quinn and sort of talk about the 3 reasons why he got fired today or yesterday, as most of you are listening to this. The last point I'll say is, you know, Ricardo Allen stepped up and made a clutch play on that 3rd down stop on the opening drive of the Panthers' 3rd quarter. You know, we talk about some of the questionable leadership within the Falcons locker room, and I'll just say Ricardo Allen seemed to be one of the only players on the defense that really made a play, a critical play in a critical moment. So, you know, whether that proves that he's a great safety at this point in time of his career, whether that proves that he, you know, he's the the best leader in the world or anything like that, but we know Ricardo Allen's been a leader for this team, and he made a play. Didn't see Deion Jones making plays. Didn't see Grady Jarrett making that many plays, whoever else. So that says something to me, and we'll see what Ricardo Allen does moving forward the rest of the season. This was his first game back. And so, you know, he made an impact coming back off of injury. Not so much for Keanu Neal. He made a couple of nice plays, but, you know, made some other mistakes as well. So we will get into Dan Quinn and why he got fired coming up on today's podcast. You know, what exactly was it? Was it bad coaching, bad scheming, the offense, hiring Dirk Cutter, not being able to get this roster up to par? We'll talk about all those issues coming up and sort of exactly what led to Dan Quinn's dismissal on today's Locked On Falcons. But before we get there, I know that talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. What is easy is you can brush it off, say, hey, man, I've lost my mojo. Maybe you're avoiding that quality time with your significant other because you've had just a busy day at work. Maybe you're not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet with Roman because you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan, and if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. To get started is simple. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL to complete your online visit today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Now, if you haven't tried Built Bars quite yet, there's no better time than today to start. Monday, October 12th is the final day of their breast cancer awareness push. With the limited release of a new strawberry flavor, Built Bar has partnered with various organizations, including Barbells for Boobs, Breast Cancer Angels, the Huntsman Cancer Institute, and Living Beyond Breast Cancer. And Built Bar will match your donation to the aforementioned organizations up to $50 per order. Plus 100% of the proceeds from the sales of their breast cancer awareness hoodie for $19.95 will go to those organizations to help support cancer patients and their families. And if you miss out on that, you can still head over to BuiltBar.com and get 20% off your next order by using the promo code LOCKEDON. Check out the 6 new flavors of Built Bars, the best tasting protein bar on the market. Again, use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. So originally I had planned, you know, I practiced over the weekend a sort of 25-minute eulogy, so to speak, assuming that we wouldn't find out that Dan Quinn was going to get fired on Sunday, but we would find out like Monday morning or Monday afternoon. I'd be able to throw up a quick little 25-minute podcast focusing solely on Dan Quinn and the reasons why he got fired. So now I'm just going to basically take that 25 minutes and try to condense it into 15 minutes to close out today's episode. So basically, you know, the reasons why I think Dan Quinn got fired are three major reasons, and we'll go through them step by step. They're somewhat related to one another. The first one, I think, is that he couldn't right the ship in 2019 when he took over defensive play call after firing defensive coordinator Marquand Manuel. And I think that personifies and exemplifies one of the biggest failings of Dan Quinn during his time here in Atlanta as this sort of alleged defensive guru coming from Seattle. He simply just couldn't fix the defense. And that was sort of where his bread was buttered and where his expertise lied. And he just, you know, proved to be a bad expert. Essentially, you know, he was the captain of the ship, you know, and essentially took over the helm and immediately steered the ship into a coral reef. And, you know, he started taking on water and basically he had to hire another person to get the ship off the reef. And thus the legend of Raheem Morris will fix it was born at that point in time. The second big failing for Quinn was his inability to adequately replace Kyle Shanahan as the offensive coordinator after 2016. As I've argued in the past and will continue to argue in the future, the biggest reason why the Falcons went to the Super Bowl in 2016 was not brotherhood. It wasn't the defense coming together. It wasn't Alex Mack stabilizing the offensive line, their talent level, or Matt Ryan's, you know, strong work ethic finally paying off for them. You know, these were all the reasons that people suggested back, particularly in 2017. It was Kyle Shanahan. And basically the argument I've presented in the past and I will continue to present is that the Falcons, you look back at that 2016 Falcons team, they were 12-0, I believe, in games where they scored 31 or more points. Now, a normal playoff team, a normal team with a high-powered offense is only going to score 31 or more points in like six or so games a year, not 12. So they basically had six more games with a high output of offense than normal. And if you assume that in the six games that they had over other teams under quote unquote normal circumstances, that they would have just split those games and gone 3-3, you know, basically they wound up winning three more games in 2016 with their 11-5 record, thanks to the output of their offense, thanks largely to Kyle Shanahan, than a normal team would have done under with similar talent levels. So essentially, without Shanahan, the argument that I presented, they probably would have been an 8-8 team. So they replaced Shanahan with Steve Sarkisian in 2017. And unlike others, I don't think that's really where it sort of blew up for the team. You know, I know there are, particularly given some of the success that he's had, especially this year, there are certainly some Matt LaFleur truthers. But, you know, prior to this past season, you know, nothing in Matt LaFleur's resume indicated that he was a particularly gifted play caller. I mean, you can argue the one year where he was calling plays with the Titans in 2018, his replacement in Arthur Smith has far exceeded anything he's done the last 2 years as a play caller. So I'm not necessarily as convinced that Matt just promoting Matt LaFleur would have solved all the Falcons' problems back then in 2017. I feel like that's more recency bias. But I think looking back in hindsight with Steve Sarkisian, he wasn't that bad. His biggest issue was the struggles against quality defenses and those opponents, which obviously would be a difficult obstacle to overcome in January where you face quality defenses and opponents. So, you know, while Sark definitely looks much better in hindsight today, at the time, I didn't really have a major issue with the Falcons' decision to dismiss him. To me, there was significant room for improvement given some of those issues that he showed. The problem really to me came not in 2017 with the decision to hire Sark and not really with the decision to fire Sark in 2018. It was with the decision to hire Dirk Koetter. And basically, I've done some dot connecting in the past, and the short version of that is the reason why, in my opinion, they hired Dirk Koetter was I think they really wanted Gary Kubiak, but Denver blocked that hire, and so they moved on to their plan B rather than persevering like Minnesota did and Vulture, and eventually the Vikings were able to get Kubiak out of Denver. Unfortunately, the Falcons didn't. I think you could make a strong argument that had they been able to successfully secure Kubiak, a lot of the issues that this team has dealt with the last couple of years would have been averted. But after moving on to their plan B, that proved to be Dirk Koetter. And I think the reason why the Falcons honed in on Dirk Koetter was with Dan Quinn, going back to the first point, taking over defensive play calling. I think he wanted a CEO on offense. He wanted someone who could run things just in case he got too bogged down and called the defense that year. And that's why the Falcons primarily targeted former head coaches. And Dirk Koetter, Mike Mularkey, Adam Gase, and Gary Kubiak were four of the people that were rumored to want the job, all former NFL head coaches. The lone exception to that was Daryl Bevel, who eventually went to Detroit. He seemed like a much better fit. In hindsight, I think it's very clear that he would have been a much better fit. But he didn't have quite that CEO experience, and apparently the Falcons decided to go with Dirk Koetter instead. And as I've said before, while everybody else in that 2019 offseason insisted that Dan Quinn put his job on the line in order to coach up Vic Beasley, I think Dan Quinn put his job on the line by hiring Dirk Koetter. He basically hired Dirk Koetter to save his job, as going back to the 2016 season, this team's success was largely built on their offense. And that gets us to the next point. I think the third failing of Dan Quinn was the struggles of the personnel moves. And I think in this case, this is where Vic Beasley comes into play, because I think he epitomizes the poor roster decisions that the Falcons made under Dan Quinn, particularly the last couple of years. Their success in 2016 and 2017 was not only due to their offense, but their defense was able to sort of play to a certain identity. That identity was, we're going to play our cover three zone on early downs, and then on third downs, we're going to man up teams, and we're going to get enough stops on third downs. We're going to get enough stops in the red zone, and go back to that 2017 defense. They were a top five red zone defense. And that's going to be good enough. We're going to get enough stops to be good enough that with our offense's ability to go down the field and score points, like if you're settling for 3 points in the red zone, our offense is going to go down and get 7 points. And we do that enough times in a game. That's going to be a winning formula for us. And that worked for the Falcons in 2016 and 2017, especially. Right, this has always been a team that has relied on their offense to bail them out of situations throughout the Matt Ryan era, which is why, you know, that issue became a problem in the Super Bowl, because they were waiting for the offense to bail them out. They didn't. There's been an issue this past season with some of their late game collapses. They were waiting for the offense to bail them out. They didn't, especially against the Bears. And then that became an issue this past Sunday where Matt Ryan threw that pick. you know, we've never been able to trust this Falcons defense to be able to get stops in the final minutes. That's rarely happened in the Matt Ryan era where you've seen the Falcons make a defensive stand at the end of the game. There's been a couple of times where that's happened, but it's not a common occurrence. It's most likely going to be the offense going down the field and scoring. But maybe that could have changed if the Falcons had done a better job managing their roster, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But they really lost that identity when it came to their secondary. Their secondary took a major step back. They could play that identity of being able to man up any group of receivers when they had Trufant and Alford and Poole at corner, when they had Jones and Neal locking down running backs and tight ends. They didn't have to have great defensive play up front in those years, but they had good enough play up front in 2016 and 2017 with players like Dwight Freeney and Don Terry Poe and Adrian Claiborne, Tack McKinley, Vic Beasley, Grady Jarrett, etc. But starting in 2018 when Robert Alford got hurt and they let him go, they let Brian Poole walk in 2019, they didn't get the same level of play in their secondary from their replacements in Isaiah Oliver and Devontae Casey. Then Desmond Trufant dealt with his injuries last year and his 2020 replacement in A.J. Terrell, while has been relatively solid for a rookie corner, isn't quite on that level that they can ask him to man up any group of wide receivers in the NFL like we could when Alford and Trufant were at their peaks. Neal and Allen's injuries at the safety position only exacerbated these issues in the secondary. And unfortunately, the Falcons just didn't make enough upgrades to their defensive line to compensate. Their decisions in the secondary fell flat on their face, as I mentioned, Isaiah Oliver. You can go back to Jalen Collins as well. And unfortunately, they kind of punted on their defensive line in the offseasons of 2018 and 2019. They didn't add any major pass rushers in those years in either free agency or the draft, and just trusted in the Vic Beasleys, in the Tack McKinleys, in the Grady Jarretts to step up. Now, Grady Jarrett was the only one that really did step up in that situation. And then they tried to make attempts to invest in their defensive line this past offseason, and those have mostly fallen flat so far this season. Marlon Davidson has been hurt, missed two games, and outside of two or three plays has been pretty inconsequential in the other three games that he's played. Charles Harris has done some nice things for the Falcons, but he's not a guy that's going to carry your defensive line. He's not going to be a Khalil Mack. He's not going to be a Danielle Hunter. He's not going to be that type of impact player. And Dante Fowler, you know, who has the legitimate excuse of playing injured this season, but you can make the argument that he's been one of the bigger free agent busts of the Domus Dimitrov era, arguably the biggest free agent bust. If you base it off of, you know, looking at his annual salary and adjust it for salary cap, he's neck and neck with Dante Robinson as the highest paid free agent that the Falcons have ever paid for to come out from outside their organization. And given his struggles, basically he just hasn't delivered. And I think, you know, that's mostly on Dan Quinn than general manager Thomas Dimitrov, who various reports are indicating that he's also on the hot seat, which understandably. And, you know, it's not to sit here and absolve Thomas Dimitrov of blame or anything like that. But I do feel like the overwhelming amount of evidence points that while Thomas Dimitrov may be the guy technically behind the wheel of the bus, so to speak, or at the helm of the ship, so to speak, it's really Dan Quinn calling the shots. He's the captain of the ship. He's the guy that is appointing him to sort of steer the ship. He's the guy that's telling them which direction to go, where the wind is, all these various things. It's more collaborative than necessarily Dan Quinn dictating, in my regard, in my opinion, in terms of their working relationship. But it's clear to me that it's Thomas Dimitrov trying to execute Dan Quinn's vision for this team and not the other way around. So I feel like those are the three things that Dan Quinn has been, you know, directly responsible for. Improving the defense in 2019, fell flat on that. Hiring the right play callers on offense, fell flat on that. And improving this roster and has largely fallen flat on that. And, you know, those are three failed cases over the past, in particular over the last 3 years. And I don't feel like it was destined to go this way. I feel like the Falcons had many opportunities, particularly over the last three off seasons and three seasons, to sort of get this ship back on track. And metaphorically speaking, there were just too many cracks in the hull, too many holes, and, you know, the ship sank. That's the bottom line. So there you guys have it. We'll continue to talk more about Dan Quinn's dismissal and how this team managed to move forward, what other changes may be happening. We'll still talk about this Panthers game tomorrow. There you guys have it. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll continue. This is a developing story, so we'll continue to be talking about this in the coming days about Dan Quinn and, you know, what's next for the Falcons as they turn the page on Dan Quinn. So there you guys have it. Until then.